Mini episode 385 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.info.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
30 seconds.
In front of all these people, you're going to pull out a gun and you're going to shoot an unarmed man.
20 seconds.
So what are you going to do? 10.
Welcome to the FDH Lounge and the Justified episode recap.
It was justified.
With your original dignitaries.
Fire in the hole!
Rick Morris and Jason Jones.
You got ice cold water running through your veins.
Breaking down each Justified episode the moment they've concluded.
Did you take a peek inside the soul of Raiden and you?
I'm just gonna let that old dog lie.
Real-time reactions. Next level analysis.
You seem to be harboring a bit of hostility there, brother.
So I've been told.
And now, your dignitaries.
Well, I believe we can take her from here.
Welcome, everyone, to FDH Lounge, mini episode number 385. This is FDH. Original dignitaries, Rick Morris and Jason Jones, breaking it down for you. Jason has now caught up at the end of the episode. He has gone through it, and we will get his thoughts on the big twist and turn that came there at the end, as well as everything else that was happening here tonight. Jason, what's going on, my man? What were your thoughts on episode 5.7?
Where to begin? It seems like every week we start off with, I don't know where to begin. But... it was one of those episodes where moment to moment, there were some things that were interesting, kept my attention. I think I had an idea what was going to happen, but the way that episode ended was not it.
Well, I kind of share your thoughts in that regard. You had texted me at one point, what's going to happen here with Boyd. I didn't know. I had a feeling that Daryl was going to play into it somehow because, again, he is kind of the wild card in all of this. He's the one who was working for Boyd. And I did have a feeling he would play into it. But, again, how strong was that at the end there with Dilly ended up going rogue at the end and gunning down Johnny Crowder's guys and really causing a situation there. Again, Chekhov's gun, you know, that guy is a legitimate nutcase. That guy has murdered people left and right for the least of things here. For him to sense that he's getting drawn upon, you know, we didn't see it coming. But, again, genius on the part of Graham Yost and all of the writers there because that's exactly what kind of a moron that guy is.
You know, I've made the reference before, but that guy, he's a ghost facer on a different show, and he's clearly playing a better role, doing a better acting job on this particular project. I got to know what's the ulterior motive here. He can't possibly have thought he was getting drawn on. That can't literally be what it was. It has to be that they didn't come all this way to not kill somebody. There's got to be some scenario in his head because I've only seen it the one time, and I'll go back later tonight and rewatch the episode. I could have sworn that there was a meeting of the eyes between him and Daryl before the gunshots, almost as if to get permission to do so, which would beg the question, what's the bigger implication long term? So that whole scene came and went fast. I couldn't believe trying to put the baby to sleep. And let's just say that there might be some blood coming from my lip as far as how hard I had to bite it not to scream out in profanities.
I can very well imagine what that might have been like. And, again, how many weeks this season, probably most of them, we've let off talking about Boyd and his storyline and his continuing arc, because it's a little bit more obvious what's going on here with him, what he's involved in. We'll get to Raylan in a little bit. As has been the case for much of this season, it's been a little bit more subtle what's been going on with him. But The storyline time was split, I'd say, almost equally between them, a little bit here and there with Ava's whole Orange is the New Black storyline that she's got going on. I will say, through about halfway into this episode, maybe even a little bit further, I was kind of hearkening back to what you said last week, where you felt like coming off a 5.5, or actually it was the week before, since last week was a bye week, I suppose, but where you said that it felt almost kind of a little bit pedestrian there for a while. I kind of had that feeling tonight where I was a little bit restless, and I did feel the second half of it, I don't want to say redeemed it, because I do have the faith that they know what they're doing, and they probably paced it that way, so maybe they wouldn't be surprised to know I felt that way as a viewer, but I got to say, me personally, through the first half of this thing tonight, I was like, come on already, man. Is something substantive that's really affecting the overall story going to happen? I was waiting for that.
You know, there were things in there in the first half that they sprinkled in that I guess have some importance. But it's not the big stuff you're looking for. You know, Kendall wanting to talk to what's-her-face before she ran out. Real quick, and then later on we find out that Kendall's trying to get the heck out of Dodge. I mean, that's a detail. It's important, but, you know, nobody's tuning in to either watching Justified Live or tuning into us live to find out about the Kendall storyline. So there was stuff like that going on. This whole, I don't know how to put this politely, the feminine power struggle between, you know, Lady Crow and Raylan's mistress, so to speak. That whole thing was interesting, but really not critical. So I see where you're going with that, but, you know, as you're defending the creators and the producers of the show, at the end of the day, though, you're kind of sitting there along for the ride. It's almost like you're on the old log ride at, you know, fill-in-the-blank amusement park. And, yeah, you're rolling up, and it's going click, 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 and who really cares? That's not the part you're waiting for, but it's all part of the ride anyway. I don't know that I got the same sensation as I did 2 weeks ago, because I think I knew something big was coming, so I was willing to just let the foundation be laid before that thing happened. And in the back of my mind, I was just hoping and praying that it was Johnny Crowder and not Boyd Crowder that was going to die. And I think that's really all I cared about to get from this episode. So, yes, I agree with you, but I don't think it was as bad as it was 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, and that's it's interesting, the different perspectives on this. RIP Johnny Crowder, by the way, small-time S-kicker that he was, ends up fighting it in the desert there as a result of that shootout. And it was, I think it was just a thing on Boyd's part where there had already been the blood that was spilled, and I guess he just figured, what's one more since it comes to this? Johnny starts mouthing off to him, gloating about how Boyd's stupid crew that he was just bragging about a second ago here really screwed the pooch. Boyd turns around, puts a bullet in him without thinking. The look on his face afterwards, though, again, you wouldn't think that he would be having any regrets because, again, what's one more? But it's almost like Boyd figured at the end there that because he pulled the trigger, that he was now somebody who had taken a bad situation and made it worse. I saw a little bit of regret on his face there. I'm going to assume that it was about that. Maybe it was about the personal aspect of it. Again, at least from his perspective, things weren't always bad between them, although as Johnny pointed out when they had their little conversations during the episode here, the lead dog is going to feel that way. The lead dog is going to tend to remember things a little bit more kindly. Johnny was always the guy on the second banana end of the spectrum here. So for Johnny, there was a bitterness that kept going right up until the very end. I'm going to assume that was what Boyd was thinking there at the end, was that I took a bad situation and made it worse. But there was a thing that the Justified official Twitter account had put out there tonight, and it was a little bit of a teaser that something happens for the worst for one of the characters that's going to be long enduring, and they basically didn't indicate who it was. You have to assume at the end that it's Boyd, and you have to assume that that bloodshed of the Mexican desert is going to be a tremendous impediment to his plans the rest of the year and perhaps beyond.
Let me go back and just
again, differing perspectives. I saw the regret, and my immediate thing went to, despite the fact that Boyd had alluded to earlier that his final demise is something that he's come to grips with a long time ago, I thought maybe that he felt he had convinced himself that Johnny needed to die and had sort of passed through all of the moral, personal, family-related issue that's going to come with that. And maybe it was more of an issue for him than he originally anticipated it would be. However, in that situation, push comes to shove. I don't know that the character would calculate this fast, but in hindsight, guns go, people are presumably going to die. Johnny's talking. Johnny can't live at this point. He cannot live. Because if he lets Johnny live and then they call Ondo or whatever they're calling him on this show, the cartel kingpin guy, they call him and his boys come to the scene, there's no guarantee he'll get another chance to at least put one bird down. So I think initially he has to make that move. That has to be done no matter what the implications are. And maybe there's something that's personal there weighing him. But clearly, a big part of that's got to be that holy crap moment when you realize that you may not have a full grasp of what's about to happen next. And that would be my indication from that look we see from Boyd, is that to this point, everything was calculated, or at least he thought everything was calculated, and now this wrinkle could be potentially catastrophic.
Well, I'm starting to wonder a little bit in terms of something that we'd heard about the Crows coming into the season here. And after I ask you this, I certainly want to prompt you, because you and I had a little bit of a discussion off air about a discovery you've made about the Crows. But I want to ask you first that coming into this season, I had seen some critics who had a little bit of an idea of what was coming this season, who'd gotten maybe seen some advanced episodes or whatever, but almost describing Darryl Crowe and the Klan coming up to Kentucky as like an invasive species, coming in there, worming their way into Harlan, Kentucky, and beyond, but not really even trying to fit into the fabric of things. You're being an alien force and just kind of wrecking havoc everywhere. I'm almost set now to go to the conspiracy theory on this and put it out there. I may look dumb if I'm wrong about this, but I will look like a soothsayer if I'm right. You alluded to a little bit of a look there, perhaps, between Dilly and Darryl Crowe out there in the desert. Did Darryl figure that maybe it's better to try to become the big dog from within, take down Boyd Crowder as part of his crew and basically wreak havoc from within and then pick up the pieces? I'm starting to wonder about that now, as opposed to him just accepting the subservient role. He had tried a couple of different things to get under Boyd's skin earlier this season, and now he's just going to turn around and accept his role as a hired gun? I'm starting to wonder if there's not a bigger plan afoot.
Well, and I'll follow this up with the thing that you're alluding to, the conversation we had earlier. I'm going to take it a step farther. To be honest, I think if what I observed is a true indicator of anything, I think you're underselling the impact.
Wow.
Now, getting to the specifics, I will say this. I think that, and this is a beautiful device that Yost and the fellows are putting out there. Whenever you watch a show, there's always some level of trying to figure out, does the audience know more than the characters, or do the characters know more than the audience? And I think in this particular case, I think what we're seeing is the audience, us, kind of has a better feel for Darryl Crowe Jr. than Boyd does. I think Boyd just looks at him as a money-hungry, redneck from Florida who doesn't know his head from his backside. Whereas I actually do think that Darryl's is an intelligent criminal. He is a deviant, but he's still intelligent enough to, let's say, be a chess player and not a checkers player. I think he's seen some things develop, and each time he's taken it in stride. We go back to that scene in the bar where ultimately he's just popping off at the mouth, and then, you know, Boyd pulls the gun and says, "I'm Boyd Crowder," and so on. And he kind of backs off. He knows what he's doing. So to go as far as to say that it's that maybe while they were waiting in that truck for Boyd and Johnny to show up, maybe they weren't trying to figure out exactly how to plan this out so it works in their benefit. So in that regard, I absolutely agree with you. Without someone in the know telling me that that's absolutely wrong, every fiber of me says that's got to be what's happening here, is that at some point this evil element has to come down to, is it Boyd's world or is it Daryl's world in the end? Now, when I said that I think you're underselling it a little bit, and I hate to do, you know, when you talk politics, you know, people say during an election, don't do electoral math, is essentially what this is equating to. So we have a 13-episode season, correct?
Yes.
We are on episode 7. We are legitimately past the halfway point. And we're just now seeing Daryl Crow start to assert himself and get that snowball rolling down the hill, so to speak. So, I can't possibly fathom with what I know from what you and I talked about earlier, and I'll get to that in a second. I cannot believe that episode 7 leads to an episode 13 finale, which leads us to season 6, where the Crow family is no longer the issue. And I just put that out there to say this. Anyone listening, anyone who's an aficionado or just an enthusiast on some level of Justified, who is current and at season 5 watching live as we are discussing these things, I implore you for this point, go back and watch the pilot. Just from what you've seen in season 5, go back and watch the pilot, because I don't have enough fingers on one hand to count the references in just the pilot episode that deals with the Crow family, the criminal element of the Crow family, the depth and width of the Crow family, and specifically the impact of the head of said crime element family, Daryl Crow Jr. Not one of Dewey's family, one of his kin, not some vague person, but they specifically reference Daryl Crow Jr. And so after watching tonight's episode, I believe that from the beginning, we knew, or they knew, that the Crow family was going to come into this and be somehow a critical, critical bad guy element, to the point where I really don't think we're going to get closure on the Crow storyline by episode 13. I think this thing is what leads us into, potentially, I could be wrong, but potentially leads us into what the major storyline is that closes out the series.
Well, that's a mouthful there. And again, this is something where, because we did not have an episode last week, they took a knee during 1 week in the Olympics, essentially, here. And you had alluded to me that you were going to go back and watch the pilot and some season 1 stuff and everything. And you had then texted me your discovery of this. And I said, wow, this is going to be great for the show. You are going to look like a genius. What a great observation about the Crows. So I'm so glad we got to work that in. Again, it actually ties more directly into the way that it played tonight in the episode. And it's something I said a couple weeks ago, too. One of the things that if you follow this thing on a level like we do, to where you're really trying to understand the business and the way that things work. I said earlier in the season when we were talking about stuff, sometimes it's a little bit of a bummer to know too much. Just like it kind of almost in wrestling sometimes with the pro graps. Sometimes if you know too much, it takes some of the fun away. Again, we know that these big casting deals tend to happen on a one-year increment. We knew all along Michael Rappaport was probably in this for just 1 year. Maybe they bring him back for the second year, but that's not what they did with the guy who played Robert Quarles. I think Neil McDonough's his name. I regret that I can't think of it off the top of my head, but I think that's him. Margot Martindale, she was clearly in for season 2, et cetera. Again, if it's a big enough storyline, maybe they bring him back next year, like you're saying. But I will say this, if I'm right and the casting plays the way that it always has on this, and if the big guest star is in for one season, then we're beginning to see, starting tonight, the very beginnings of how that's going to go, that he's going to come to odds with Boyd Crowder and probably end up on the short end of the stick, just like everybody who's come before him.
I mean, everything track record-wise would say that. And to be honest with you, it's the thing I really do enjoy. I love the fact that Martindale was, you know, Mags for this duration, and then when you get to that, the end of that that season, of that episode, you have this sort of, again, it's this beautiful imagery that takes you back to the old West and the standoff, because you've got Raylan at one end of the table and Mags at the other, and it's this big moment, and then it comes to an end. And, you know, that's just how it is. The Dust Bowl blows on. But and you had it with Corals, we think. You had it with Augustine and so on and so forth. But I love that that's the structure of it. And if they change it, I don't think I'd love it any less. I'd be surprised that they went that way. But knowing that the series is going to end, as opposed to just having them pull the plug on the project, it just feels like there's got to be something bigger. And I think that this episode came entirely too late for it to just end in the next six episodes.
Well, they're keeping us guessing, that's for sure, because, again, you go back to last year. You saw how that season was going to go. The hunt for Drew Thompson, you figured that Raylan would probably get his man, but you basically knew that one way or another that was going to wrap itself up. Season 3 was pointing to Quarles versus Raylan from the very beginning. You could see that. It was going to come down to the culmination at the end. Season 2, a little bit weird, but you still had the undertones the whole time. Just the fact that they kept pointing to the family feud between the Bennetts and the Givenses over the period of time, you figured it was probably going to come down to Raylan versus them, and it did. The outlines of this thing are the fuzziest that we've seen since season 1, and they're really kind of keeping us on our toes. Before we segue over to Raylan and take a look at him, and his whole, the import of what he was doing tonight long-term was certainly less than what was going on with Boyd. Quick thing here, and I will keep it quick, my weekly Shield crossover, now that I've made it all the way through the Shield, again, Walt Goggins, the common element between the shows. Something I want to mention to you, Jason, because I know you're fond of sports analogies like this, and you're somebody that, again, as a sports romantic, I know bemoans the fact that, like, we didn't get to see, say, Magic Johnson making those great passes to Kobe Bryant. You didn't get to see different great players from different generations playing. I will say this from learning about the Shield and watching some stuff and some documentary thing about it. Scott Brazil, great executive producer and also a director for the show. The way that he worked with Walt Givens, or Walt Goggins, hands-on on there, really helping him develop his character of Shane Vendrell. It makes me wistful. I mean, first and foremost, he perished young from Lyme disease and ALS, left behind a great family, and it's a personal loss more than anything else. He seems like a great man, but this man with such a long history, going back to Hill Street Blues and all these quality shows that he worked on and the work that he did with Walton Goggins. And Goggins said in one of the documentary things about the Shield that he showed me that you could do things like this on TV. Well, Goggins had always kind of separated it, like, I've done serious acting and I've done TV, but this is the first real heart and soul thing I've ever done with TV. And the character of Boyd Crowder is so much better than that of Shane Vendrell. And I don't say that as a slam on the Shield, but they didn't build the Shield around Shane Vendrell nearly as much as it's almost built more around Boyd than Raylan at this point. I know that won't always be the case. This is a show about Raylan, but Boyd is at least the co-lead. You said a couple weeks ago one of the best characters in the recent history of TV. It makes me wistful to think of what Scott Brazil would do if he was working with Walton Goggins on this show, because they did such great work on the Shield, and Goggins has even more to work with here. That's a loss that we don't get to see that.
Yeah, it is. And I'm not as familiar with his work, and you know, you and I and a bunch of people in our collective circles have a a debate here and there on great quality TV, and a lot of times Hill Street Blues comes up as one of those defining shows that changes the course of television for the better. So that alone says miles. But, you know, it's funny. I've only seen a handful of things that Goggins has done. And as I referenced before, I start with Major League back to the minors. Tells you how mm-hmm. bad it was in the beginning and how far he's come, where he played a character called Downtown. Cause he, and you know how small he is. He's not really yeah. a power hitter, but, you know, they try to sell it. And then we move along. I've seen him in a couple things. Most recently, G.I. Joe Retaliation, which absolutely shouldn't be on his IMDb when you consider The Shield and Justified and some of these other things. It's just one of those things that if that's how he felt working with Shield, and I haven't seen Shield yet to really make any comments about his performance, but if it's what I think it is from the way you've described it, good, bad, or otherwise, then you compare that to where he is. It is disgusting. I mean, you're talking, you know, Peyton Manning handing off to Jim Brown kind of stuff. Yeah. I get where you're coming with the sports analogies. And it's one of those things where if you could take one great thing, one catalyst, and put it in something that's already great, and you see where you know, sky's the limit. So I absolutely get that. With that said, though, we did see something today that made us all remember real quick that this is a Raylan show.
Well, the scenes with the respective ladies on there certainly did, but which one are you thinking of in particular?
Well, and here's where, as someone who would like to refer to himself at least at times as a writer or someone who sees these things unfold, there's like the third or fourth time in the episode where someone is telling Raylan, "This is coming from the chief." And he stands up and he walks. He's walking towards Art. You see Art turn around in his chair. And that's not it. That's not the moment. For anybody who DVR'd the episode, don't delete it. Go back, watch this. He gets through the door. Art doesn't even look at him and says, "Don't knock or anything." And then the camera finds Raylan's face. And there's a certain look he has. And then he says, "Would you like me to go out and knock again and come back in?" And let's just say that that's the polite thing, because in his head, he's cussing Art out at that moment. And you can see it in his face, but it is so subtle. It's the way his face is tilted, the angle that it's looking down. You just know that it's about to go down. And then as that conversation goes back and forth, neither man is willing to budge. And, you know, at this point, we've almost forgotten everything that's happened to this point, because all that matters in the end is Art going to find a way to at least temporarily forgive Raylan for being Raylan, or is Raylan going to walk? And the walls come tumbling down, because if Raylan walks, you know, what else is going to happen? So that's the only reason I bring that up is – Walter Goggins brings to the screen one of the best characters I can remember seeing. And you know how much of a fan of, like, the West Wing I am in a lot of Aaron Sorkin mm-hmm. projects? There has never been and probably will never be a character in any show like that of the quality of a Boyd Crowder. But with that being said, this is still a show about Raylan. Now, Boyd may be 1B, but he's not ever going to be 1A because the show is about Raylan. And in that moment, nothing else mattered.
No, you're right about that. And there was a lot of drama in that scene. Raylan got put on this more or less standalone procedural case that he was on tonight because Art had him on walk-in duty dealing with the people just coming into the office. He ends up involved in this whole case with a hacker. And it was kind of interesting. You got to see a little bit different side of things there. There was the one real funny line when Boyd was asking the IT guy about the blog that the guy had that he was taunting him on. Think I can just go on there and say something to him? The guy made some kind of crack about, no, we're decades away from the kind of technology to where you can respond on a blog or something like that, which kind of shows you that Raylan's maybe a little bit more computer illiterate than we've been led to believe through the course of this, or maybe that jives with what you think of his character. I don't know, but he was kind of dealing with that stuff towards the end. It was looking like he was going to go back to Florida. Again, looking like Raylan is going to be dealing with his stuff out of uniform, which is ironically what got him in this trouble in the first place. It was while he was on suspension at the end of last year that he was conspiring with Sammy Tonin to have Nicky Augustine rubbed out, which is the root of Art's grievance with him. He had all of that going on, and again, it's going to be interesting to see. I don't see Raylan quitting at this point. I don't see him. He's clearly not going to get transferred out of that office. Because then you would have something like The Office itself, the TV show, where you had the Stanford office and you had the Scranton office for a couple of months. We're not going to be seeing action split like that. So one way or another, that's going to get papered over, at least in the short term. We just don't know how. The other element here that we haven't discussed yet tonight, Ava's whole thing in prison here, the way that she more or less set up that guard to get taken out. She had aligned herself with the Christian group in prison, which is actually the big heroin pushers. She was apparently going to have to bang that guard in addition to smuggling heroin in. She found a way both out of that situation by slipping the heroin into his possessions there and also potentially set herself up to get the heroin coming in from Boyd. She thinks Boyd's going to have the heroin. Don't know if that's going to be the case because he's got to make out of Mexico first. A lot that was going on there with the storyline tonight. You had texted me that you were a little bit surprised about her aligning herself with the Christian group until I think probably the outlines of that became more apparent to you. I will say also, too, I will give credit to Joelle Carter, and I've commented about this when we've been talking about this on Facebook previously in our little TV snobs forum, and I'll give credit to Natalie Z also. These actresses, they don't mind making themselves look beat. Yeah, they are beautiful women, but they do not mind doing that. And if you had Ava on there tonight looking anything but like how we've seen Ava Crowder look like for most of the series. I'm not just talking about the hair, because the hair came out okay, but it looked like she kind of had a black eye or two, maybe a result of last week with the beatdown that she had. Credit where credit is due to the actresses for having the ego to come in there and not look nearly as good as they can look. But fascinating arc continues with the whole Ava Crowder on the journey to sort of find out who she's going to become. I mean, I don't mean to get too dramatic, but this is really a defining journey for her this season, I think.
Yeah, and you alluded to the fact that her experience here is probably going to change her in some way that will be impactful whenever she does get out, and I think we all have to agree that she's going to get out. But let me backtrack a second. First thought, Ava looking a little beat up, I kept noticing that it looked like someone punched her in the left side of her teeth because there's a very clear bruise outline that covers her mouth area on her left side.
Oh.
It's
okay.
Very pronounced. I mean, if you go back and watch it again, it's
you
almost
know
like
yeah,
somebody
I do,
put...
I remember that. Yeah.
It's like somebody put a cup, you know, bottom towards her face and tapped it, you know. But, no, they did a very good job of making her look like she's dealt with some things in there. I will say it's not really pertinent to breaking down the storylines or anything, but I got no problem with the new haircut. Perfectly okay with it. I think when it comes to other women from afar, especially celebrity types, I got no problem when they go extreme and cut it super short. We'll leave that alone. That's for a topic for another show. But I got no problem with it. I did like the authenticity of what's going on. Ironically, the girl that turned her on to the possibility of going down the religious road, if I'm not mistaken, is also going to be in a big movie coming up this summer or next. I'm not sure, but we'll worry about that some other time. But that whole storyline, it's not that I had a problem with her, you know, getting in with the Christian group. It's that it was more of a it's the feminist angle of it that I thought was a little cliche, and that's what that text was about. She's gonna. Chances are, most inmates, in some capacity, fictional or otherwise, are gonna try to find God in some way. And Ava's not exactly a practicing Christian to begin with. The thing that bothered me was, you know, the whole feminist angle of it. The whole, you know, have you found, you know, mother, whatever they called it. That was going a little crazy, because I don't want Ava coming out of there, you know, talking about how she don't need no man, because that would just be way over the top type of thing, right? I don't want to see. And that's not the way they went. Most important thing in that whole bit, and I'll just let you take it from here, is I was fine with all of it until we see the whole, and maybe this is my emotional attachment to the characters, the moment that she was like, every time? Like, we get the drugs in, but the cost is that I've got to give it up to some guard. And it's almost like she's thinking in her head, I'm Ava effing Crowder. This ain't happening. And right then, right, I knew that either something very bad was going to happen, or there would be some other tangent taken. And believe me, as a fan of the show, I was very happy to see her not go beyond that stall wall.
Oh, absolutely. And, again, just about all the sands are out of the hourglass here, but we've broken it all down, I would say, for this week. We'll find out how the separate journeys continue to go here. Looks like she's going to align her journey back with Boyd's subsequently here. Boyd almost certainly will find a way to get out of Mexico. He'll have the heroin. It'll be flowing. She needs it in jail. What's going to be happening with Raylan from here on in? Very, very opaque here at the midpoint of the season. Like I said, much more so than the last couple of seasons where the outlines were all headed a certain way. We have a lot more questions than answers right now, Jason, and it's going to make it a lot of fun tracing it through the rest of the way. Thanks very much for joining me again tonight, my man, and I look forward to what 5.8 is going to bring us next week.
Absolutely.
As we bring the show to a close, we would like to extend our deepest gratitude to NBC, CBS, ABC, Fox, All Clear Channel affiliates, TNT, TBS, USA, UPN, Deadspin.com, YouTube.com, YTMND.com, MySpace.com, various blogs, Fox News, CNN, CNBC, MSNBC, IamBored.com, Billboard.com, Google.com, ESPN, ESPN2, ESPN News, ESPN Classic, NBA TV, NFL Network, Sports Time Ohio, Athlon Magazine, Comedy Central, Cartoon Network, The Boomerang Channel, QVC, BET, The Spice Channel, Steno Notebooks, Manwich, Papermate Office Supplies, Waitresses, Strippers, Bartenders, Garbage Men, Janitors, Microwave Popcorn, The Writers of The Office, Scrubs, Entourage, My Name is Earl, Oz, Metalocalypse and the Boondocks, Awkwafina, and The Periodic Table of Elements.